Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. There was a very tense moment at the seizure of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, recorded in Mark chapter 14, beginning with verse 48. And Jesus answered and said unto them, Are ye come out as against a thief, with swords and with staves to take me? I was daily with you in the temple, teaching, and ye took me not. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. And they all forsook him and fled. And there followed a certain young man, having a linen cloth about his naked body. And the young man laid hold of him, and he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all of the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. In this account, we have a dramatic moment when an unidentified young man, who was obviously following Jesus, but who also was very frightened at the events taking place, he ran away. It is usually thought that this panic-stricken young man was none other than the writer, John Mark. The reluctance to name oneself was characteristic of those who wrote at that time. This was a frantic, embarrassing, and threatening experience for him when he, like all the others who had followed Jesus, ran away and forsook Christ. It shows his fear of being aligned with Jesus, revealing his immaturity, his spiritual weakness, a lack of conviction, being void of courage and fearful, at that moment at least, in his life. Now, we may be inclined to excuse him by saying, well, he wasn't the only one who fled. And that is true. Did not Peter stoutly declare that he would die for him rather than forsake him? Was not this the stand of all of the disciples? And yet, they did just what they said they would not do. Mark was not alone in abandoning Jesus. Some might take comfort in the weaknesses by reminding themselves of the weaknesses of others. But the failure in others, friend, does not excuse nor lessen our own failures. The actions of all the friends of Jesus were regrettable. But we must recognize the weakness of John Mark at this moment, even though he may have been adversely influenced by the others. But the life of John Mark cannot properly be told only by using the word weakness. That would leave a false impression of him. It would distort the real person. We must also include the word strength. Both words, weakness and strength, are significant and revealing in this man's character, as well as that of most of us. But let it be stressed how important the relationship of these two words really is. What we contend is that it makes a great deal of difference whether one is weak or whether one is strong, but it also makes a great difference whether one is going from weakness toward strength or going from strength toward weakness. Where we are in living the Christian life is so important, but the direction in which we are going is also vital. Some lives have begun with great strength, only to be dissipated into weakness, such as King Saul, the first king of Israel. Even Solomon might qualify as one who went from strength to weakness. Demas, who fell away and forsook Paul and Christ, went from strength to weakness. Judas is a classic example of going from strength to weakness. But others may begin in weakness and proceed to strength. Such was the life of John Mark. We all begin our service to Christ in weakness, but we must go forward toward spiritual strength. The life of Mark can be assembled by the bits and pieces that we have revealed to us concerning him. We need to study this man, because it is a source of encouragement to us, an inspiration to press on and to keep trying. Every Christian can look back in his life and find some humiliating, weak, and frail, even some sinful disappointment in himself and in the way he failed in doing something that he needed to do. Every Christian is involved in a life of growing from where he is toward where he needs to be. We're all moving, hopefully, from weakness toward strength. We do not live perfectly. Sometimes we suffer setbacks along the way. But we must remember that failure in one battle does not necessarily mean defeat in the entire war. Are you aware that the Confederacy won more battles than did the North in the war between the states in America? And yet the war was won by the North. The devil knocks us down at times, but that does not have to spell our defeat and our surrender. John Mark was a man whose first name, John, was Jewish, and his other name, Mark, was Roman. This indicates the possibility that he, like Paul, was a Roman citizen, although this is not certain, and it's not very important anyway. He was a kinsman of Barnabas. You know, knowing a person's family sometimes explains why people are like they are, although it's not always an infallible standard by which to determine a person's character. Barnabas was a man of great influence for good in the early days of the church. In Acts chapter 4, we read of his liberality in laying gifts at the feet of the apostles for use in the cause of Christ. He was known as the son of exhortation, the son of consolation. He had lived a life of encouraging others. Barnabas had been a companion to Paul as they traveled about preaching the gospel. And Barnabas was the person who was unwilling to cast John Mark aside when John Mark blundered another time in his life, as we shall consider. Doubtless this great man, Barnabas, had a tremendously good influence over John Mark. Mark had an excellent background, an excellent upbringing for laboring in the master's vineyard. His home was a gathering place of the early Christians for prayer when Peter and others were imprisoned. And when Peter and John were released from prison, they went to the home of the mother of Mark. And this might indicate that they knew this was a frequent place for good brethren to gather. You know, having Christian brethren in the home is always a good influence on children. Mark very likely was converted by Peter because Peter referred to him as his son in the sense that Paul referred to Timothy in 1 Peter 5 and verse 13. With his background, it is little wonder that he was asked to accompany Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. He seemed quite qualified for the work. His duties were to minister to these other two older men, helping them in whatever way he could. He was considered prepared for that labor, although he proved otherwise. On his first journey, Mark experienced a second failure of his life, at least in the eyes of Paul. Mark turned away from the work at a crucial time, and he went back home. There has been much speculation as to why Mark went back. He had seen the success of the work in Cyprus, and with Paul's encounter with the sorcerer Elymas, when Paul struck him blind because he hindered Sergius Paulus from hearing the truth. The tour seemed destined for great results, but as they went inland from the sea, Mark decided to go no further. Some have supposed he just got plain homesick. Others have thought he preferred to work with Peter rather than Paul and Barnabas. Some have been very charitable and suggested he went home to care for his mother. Others have said he might have been too prejudiced to have anything to do with accepting the Gentiles and preaching the gospel to them. But the fact remains, we do not know why he went home. We only know that he did. Now, whatever was the real reason, it was sufficiently injurious to Paul's mind to cause Paul to refuse to allow him to accompany them on a second journey when time came for them to leave. He gave as his reason for rejecting John Mark, he had not gone with them to the work as he should have done. And the difference that arose between Barnabas and Paul over John Mark was so deep that Barnabas was willing to take Mark, Paul was not. And this contention grew until the two leaders separated and went their separate ways into the work, Barnabas taking Mark and Paul taking one named Silas. Whatever was behind this great contention, it cannot be denied that Mark's failure to stay with the work was a disappointment because he had not met the measure as he should have done. Someone has suggested that Paul was right about the truth that Mark gave in too easily on that first journey, but Barnabas was right about Mark, just as he had been right about Paul. He saw Mark's potential, and what Mark was capable of becoming for the Lord in his work. And do you know that later, even Paul recognized the value of Mark and mentioned him as a faithful co-worker in Philemon verse 24? Mark did become a respected and respectable leader of Christians. In Rome, he was one of the faithful who stood by Paul. In Colossae, the church was urged to receive him. In Babylon, he was with Peter in the work. In Ephesus and Asia Minor, Paul said, "Bring Mark with you," 2 Timothy 4:11. Once Paul considered Mark a hindrance, but later he considered him a source of joy. The Holy Spirit chose this man, Mark, to be one of the four to write an inspired account of the life of Christ while he was here on earth. Such failures as Mark experienced at the onset might have caused some of lesser character to have fallen into disarray and defeat. Many have failed to grow because of some smaller reasons than these, but there were several factors that caused Mark to grow from his weakness into his strength. And certainly, Mark deserves much credit for that himself. It took stamina and conviction and determination. He had to have resolve and knowledge and devotion to make the gains that he made. But it also took the severe rebuke from Paul, which doubtless aroused him to self-examination and challenged him to improve. It helped him to see his own failures and to see what he needed to do to improve. These rebukes assisted him in seeing his latent talents. But it also took the patient and kind and persistent understanding of Barnabas, who did not give up on him in his hour of failure. What might have happened to Mark without the encouragement from Barnabas can only be a speculative matter. But those who grow from weakness to strength usually have somebody, somewhere, who stands by them, not condoning their weaknesses, but encouraging them to come out of them. And Barnabas did this for John Mark. And surely credit belongs to the Lord, from whom all strength is derived. And all these sources combined led Mark to become a blessing to the cause of Christ, and he's even yet a blessing to all mankind today, thousands of years after his life and his death. We're fortunate to have this record about Mark. It helps us to take heart in our own failures. It leads us to not allow our setbacks knock us out. His life proves that the past failures need not prevent us from being what we can be and what we ought to be. Failures will make us humble, and they will enable us also to be aware of our dependence and our weakness. But many have profited immeasurably from their past areas. They have turned them from being stumbling blocks into stepping stones and grown stronger in spite of them. Friend, we can overcome our sins and our faults, and we can be pleasing to God. God knows that we're often weak, and He is not pleased with our weakness. But when He sees that we are striving to go forward from weakness toward strength, this is pleasing in His sight. Christian growth must be the goal of our life. Moving toward spiritual maturity, becoming more and more like Jesus, this is our aim and our purpose, is it not? We can outgrow our weaknesses. There's a story told of a man who was caught stealing, and it was branded across his forehead the letter T that stood for thief. But as the years passed, this man learned to read and to spell. Living in a distant western town where few could read and write, he soon became the man who would read the letters that would come to other people, and he would write their answers for them. And as the people began to value reading and writing, they asked him to teach them and to teach their children how to read and write. And year after year he taught them. And finally, as an old man, he died. As his body laid in his coffin, one father walked by it with his son. The son, not knowing the man's past, noticed the branded T on his forehead and asked his father what it meant. The father either had never known or had forgotten, but he said to his son, "I think it must mean teacher." From defeat to victory is the story, friend. Is not this what God offers us through Christ? In Him we can be what we're capable of being. We can live this life acceptably and leave it with the assurance of heaven. We can grow from our weaknesses and become strong. May God help each of us to make this a major ambition in life. This has been The Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.